When a wage earner's wages fluctuate, and sometimes even when that just seems to be about to happen, the wage earner makes adjustments, or has adjustments thrust upon him or her. This is as true of players in the National Football League as it is of anybody else who works for a living. It's also as true of pro football players as it is of any other fellow similarly attached or previously attached that alimony and child support payments are inclined to rise and fall according to income. When it's falling that happens, you cannot get blood out of a turnip, whether the turnip sells insurance, teaches geometry, or jumps on footballs. So it's not surprising that according to a widely read and very widely commented upon article published this week on Bloomberg.com, that numbers of NFL players have been trying to arrange for more modest payments to various people they've been required to support. This might be characterized as preemptive action, since normally, even absent a lockout, NFL players aren't paid in May. Unless their agents have arranged for advances on bonuses or salary, players receive their checks during the season. And the premise of the story itself might be characterized as unfair and misleading, since the pro football players exploring the possibility of adjusting downward their financial obligations are only doing what jobless or potentially jobless stockbrokers, bankers, and corporate executives too insignificant to qualify for golden handshakes have always done. But NFL players earn an average of $1.8 million annually, and NBA players, who are anticipating a lockout of their own next month, average almost $6 million, so they are likely subjects for stories about money that is and then suddenly isn't, which is a popular subject. Beyond that, a relatively small number of pro football and basketball players have been spectacularly prolific in the production of children, and accordingly, their associates in the games have sometimes been unfairly characterized as generally profligate in that area. Still, dubious as some of them have been, this week's stories of women and children as potential victims of the lockout does more thoroughly establish the context within which that lockout is continuing. Like all big businesses, the NFL supports a lot of people peripheral to the enterprise itself, not only purveyors of bad food and warm beer and marketers of large foam fingers, but also the partners and progeny of the players. It all adds up to another reason to hope that whatever petitions for relief the players have been filing will become irrelevant by the time they are scheduled to get paid again. It's 22 and a half minutes before the hour.
Support for Only a Game comes from the listeners of WBUR Boston, where the program is produced, Harvard University, whose summer school has courses for high school, college, and adults to earn academic credit and experience campus life, summer.harvard.edu, and Oliver Wyman, an international strategy consulting firm. With 3,000 professionals worldwide, Oliver Wyman serves global 1,000 companies. OliverWyman.com. This is NPR.
Some house cats purr more loudly than others, and the loudest cat of them all is Smokey, who belongs to a London woman named Ruth Adams. For reasons best known to herself, Ms. Adams brought Smokey to a community college where somebody was willing and perhaps even eager to record the cat's purr, which has been described as, quote, a sound akin to the cooing of an angry dove. Having dispatched the tape to Guinness, not the beer people, the record book people, Ms. Adams and her colleagues breathlessly waited for news. As far as the Guinness people could determine, no domestic cat had ever purred more powerfully than Smokey, who probably responded to the news by making, quote, a sound akin to the cooing of an angry dove, and woke everybody up.